Welcome, everyone, and welcome to this edition of On the Agenda podcast with ASBSD. My name is Heath Larson, Executive Director. And in this podcast, just want to give you a couple informational item updates from the association. January is National Mentoring Month, and wanted to just mention Teammates of South Dakota and the benefits that mentoring youth can provide to not only our mentees as the kiddos, but also mentors. Teammates Mentoring was started by former Nebraska football coach Tom Osborne and his wife. And anyone interested in Teammates or potentially exploring Teammates Mentoring in the state of South Dakota, go to teammates.org and you can find more program information there with Teammates. A great organization, a great opportunity from anytime we know in schools where we can do mentoring has a profound impact on the life of a child. So I'd really encourage you to take a look at that for your school or school district. In addition, the legislative session for 2026 is underway. We are just, we had last week and then we're into it Tuesday. So there's bills being dropped. LRC has been very busy with bill drafts. We are following all of those closely. You can access those on Bill Tracker on the ASBSD webpage. So if you want to see where we're at with a bill or where it sits, get on our webpage, click on Bill Tracker, and you can follow along closely with that. Typically, we update Bill Tracker daily, so it's a great reference point for you as a school board member. Also, pay attention to our Cracker Barrel information. We post that on our webpage as well, so you can stay in touch with that information. Just wanted to make mention of our Legislative Action Network as well. Once we start getting into the heat of session and with bills, that process will be utilized when we engage or that we utilize for you as board members to engage with your local legislators or members of a committee from a standpoint of if we want some assistance working a bill or one that we would like stopped or supported. Certainly last but not least, we want you to stay engaged from a standpoint with associated school boards for all of your information. We provide board trainings. We provide our teacher placement center, all of those great services that we offer at associated school boards for you as members. Stay in touch and tune with that. And we look forward to continuing our work and through the legislative session. Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of On the Agenda, the ASBSD podcast. And we're blessed to have with us today Secretary of South Dakota Department of Education, Joe Graves. Welcome, Dr. Graves.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. We look forward to hearing from you today and just want to talk a little bit about education and your perspective and go from there. So we might as well dive right into it, Secretary. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background prior to your current role as the Secretary of Education.
Sure. Born and raised in Sioux Falls by a school librarian, a mother, and a math teacher father who had joined the teaching ranks after serving in World War II. I loved education throughout. I had a great education from the Sioux Falls School District at Cleveland Elementary and Whittier Junior High School and Lincoln High. And I went on from there to college at State, got over to Iowa for a while. I was a teacher, principal, and superintendent over there for 14 years. Returned to South Dakota in 2000, became superintendent of the Mitchell School District, which is just a great district and a great community. And then I moved on to here when Governor Noem gave me a call and asked to take on this position.
Yeah, outstanding. Tell us a little bit about, so you have a lot of experience, a lot of background and perspectives, obviously, in K-12 education, and we're thankful you rejoined us from Iowa back here to South Dakota, so appreciate you coming back. From your perspective, what's the most important outcome South Dakota's K-12 system should be delivering for students now?
Literacy, reading proficiency. That's the big focus. It's always been the big focus in elementary schools. It's what makes a student be successful later on in life and college and whatever post-secondary study they want and whatever career they want to do. Literacy is the focus. And fortunately, that's where we're putting our efforts and our money right now to making that happen. And what we need to do is we need to really move that needle.
As a previous elementary principal, I couldn't agree more. And certainly, any opportunity to move the new needle in student achievement is in literacy is well worth it. How about over the next 5 years? What are you seeing there? What are your some of your goals?
Well, I mean, that's the literacy is going to be the focus for the next 5 years. In addition to that, though, I would say that we are going to be adopting the math standards here in April, the Board of Educational Standards, and that's going to be some changes. Frankly, math is math, and there is no science of math, so we're going to be focusing on some professional development and making those math standards a little less complicated in terms of the verbiage, simply so that parents can have a better shot at helping their children with math. And that people who don't have a strong background who are teaching for us in mathematics, which means they're not certified to teach secondary mathematics, for example, will have a shot at having a clearer comprehension of what it is exactly we're trying to teach. So literacy first, math second.
Sounds like a good order. My wife's a high school math teacher for 30 years, so I get all kinds of math lessons in terms of dollars and cents and everything else. So, no, that sounds great. Tell us a little bit. The science you mentioned the literacy part, and that's called the science of reading, and that's not a. We've been talking about that for a while, and was put into place, and there's been funding allocation for it. Talk a little bit. We had talked, I think, previously collegially about how the science of reading is not necessarily a new concept. It's been a concept that what when I was an elementary principal, we had what was called the Reading First Initiative through Reading First,
I
which is
remember
in essence, I believe you were superintendent at the time and maybe had some Reading First schools. Really, talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's really the same concept, correct, in terms of the Big Five?
it. Yeah, same concept, same pedagogy. The difference is this time it's not going to be a grant that just affects a few school districts that then boost their scores. This is a grant that's being offered, throughout the state. Not everybody qualifies it. I do get that. We're putting a lot more money into it, and this is key. We're going to make sure that the educator prep programs in South Dakota, SDSU and USD and the rest, are teaching using science of reading to the incoming educators, because that's what happened last time. The new educators came in, they weren't trained in it, and so very quickly, science of reading disappeared, even in the schools where it had such success. This time, those people are going to be trained as they come in. So we're going to have the people trained who are teaching it now, incoming people using the same pedagogy. That should really make the difference.
Sounds good. Tell us, Secretary, how does the Department of Education balance statewide priorities with the local control we know is so valuable and important to our South Dakota school boards and South Dakotans in general, and that we just value so deeply? How do you balance that?
Well, local control is extremely important to everyone until it isn't. And that's been the problem. There really isn't a bright line, There's a point where you say, okay, local control doesn't work in this case, or it's important enough, we need to not go with it. I have a very strong commitment to local control. And in fact, when I'm testifying and people are bringing in bills and I'm testifying against those bills, frequently my very first testimony is, wait a minute, this violates local control. Let's leave these jobs to our local school district. Let's make these decisions. I wish there was a bright line. I wish there was a line in the sand you could just draw and then everybody could observe and go, okay, this is when local control exists and this is where it doesn't. As an example, the state finance formula can't be local control. It has to be the way it is because we have to provide an equitable funding source for all students in South Dakota. So if you are in the richest property tax district in the state or the poorest, shouldn't matter, you still get the same amount of money. And that is why local effort's so important. The local puts in its amount and then the state kicks in the rest. That way everybody gets a fair shake. You shouldn't be in a poorly funded school just because you live in a poorly funded community. It just doubles up the problem. So there are some examples where it doesn't work, but there are also hundreds of examples where it really does. I'm really committed to local control. It isn't always easy because even when I was a school superintendent, and I'm sure many of your boards have had the same experiences, I wish the state would just take this thing over and do it. Then we wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. Well, that's us on the other side going, we don't want local control only when we do. I'm committed to it. I know the executive branch, the governor's committed to it. But again, it's always that same thing of when it works and when it doesn't. And people across the board are always finding ways to say, "Well, I believe in local control, except in this case." So.
Absolutely, certainly a fine line there. And obviously, with associated school boards, we're big believers in local control. I've talked to superintendents, school board members, and much to your sentiment, have said we can't say we want local control for this, but then totally ignore it and other factors and say, well, we want the state to swoop in and make a mandated change for us because we don't want the controversy or have to make it at the local level. So you can't have your cake and eat it too, so to speak, which is easier said than done.
Dead on.
Talk to us a little bit, Secretary, about what student success means to you beyond test scores.
Well, we often talk about that beyond test scores. The problem with that thinking, though, is that test scores do represent something. Test scores represent a reality about what children have learned academically. So I don't tend to believe the idea that we need to talk less about test scores and more about test scores. Test scores reflect a very meaningful reality. They detect and they tell us the fundamental purpose of a school, which is to learn certain things, to master certain skills. So beyond that, if we talk about with that caveat, there are some other things. And so nobody tests how students can get along. Nobody tests how students can participate in a meaningful way with other people. Nobody tests whether or not a student can find their way after high school into another area. We know they're academically or not academically prepared, but there are other parts of that too, and how they deal with other people, whether they can live on their own, whether they're going to be deadly homesick, all those kinds of things. There's lots of things like that. And so oftentimes when I see, for example, at high school, so many of the CTE and the student organizations, those are teaching a different skill. Some people call it emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is huge. When I have for many, many years, the only thing I was interested in was that academic mastery. And that is still our primary point. But I have watched my own children, and I have watched other people's children, and I've seen them falter or succeed based upon their emotional intelligence. So there's more to it than just the know-how. It's also the ability to get along with others and read others and know how a system works that it's very difficult to test. In fact, we largely don't test it.
What is an effective partnership between local boards and the Department of Education look like in practice? Could you talk a little bit about that, maybe, kind of how you envision that partnership?
Sure. Well, I think what it is, it has to be based on a shared need. So the DOE and the state has to have an interest in what is being talked about, and the school board has to have a need and a focus on that as well. So it has to have a shared perception that this is something we want to do. And that's primary. And then it needs to be some kind of a shared implementation. So it has to be clear what is the state's going to do and what is it that the local school board is going to do. For example, we received a SPDIG grant for mathematics. Once we get those standards settled, we're going to be looking at, okay, what is it we want to teach people in that? And so one thing we can do is we can hire trainers in a particular pedagogy or a particular instructional methodology that we then can offer it to teachers across the state. Doesn't mean that the local district needs to buy into that pedagogy, but if they do, then that's something we can offer to them. Why is that important? Because, well, places like Sioux Falls and Rapid City and Watertown, they're big enough. If they want to offer a professional development across the board, they really can. But in a small school, it's tougher. How do you afford that kind of a person? And so that's something the state can kick in, and simply upon the efficiencies and the economies of scale, we can sometimes provide better than a local school district.
Sure. Off of that, let's talk a little bit about a few examples of strong collaboration that you've seen and worked with between the state and local school districts.
Well, I would say that literacy component. You remember, and I remember, Science of Reading. I'm sorry, the Reading First initiative. It was brilliant. It really worked well, and that was something that we were able to do. So we were able to secure the funding from the federal government, bring that down to the local level. We provided the people who came in and saw the program and oversaw the program It just really worked well. That was a great example of strong collaboration. Now we need to take it to the next level, where we have a strong collaboration across the school districts and the DOE. If this is going to work, we're going to need to do that. And by the way, this needs to work. There are people out there who are losing faith in us, and I don't want that. I desperately don't want that. We're an incredibly important institution in our society, and we need to make sure that we're not doing things, we're not squabbling among ourselves, we're not doing things, giving. Well, we don't really care about the literacy initiative. We think we're okay. We need to move everybody up. And that's just huge. So we need to focus on that, because I think if we don't, this may be our last major chance to make that happen, to restore that confidence. You know how long ago it was that we had the book, Johnny Can't Read? Well, it's still there. It's still out there. That perception is still out there. We need to get that taken care of. The other one I would say, that strong collaboration we had, was on teacher compensation. Now, I know the teacher compensation came down, the bill 2 years ago, which we heavily sponsored and advocated for, and we still believe is extremely successful. In fact, it has been very successful. But it has required collaboration. One of the things I thought was incredibly made me very optimistic was the fact that once that kicked in, we had a whole bunch of school districts immediately move to the $45,000 base salary. They didn't need to. The requirement wasn't in place yet. It was going to be like 2 years down the road. Most districts just whoop, they made it happen. So that was a great collaboration. Now we're going to have the collaboration on the teacher compensation as it moves forward on the combination of the benefits and the rest. And we had one school district of the state not meet that last year. And they're a very outlier school district. So really, that collaboration has worked well. I'm very proud of that, and I think it's gonna it is having an impact. We moved from 49th that single first year to 46th in the country. I realize 46 is not, a bragging rights, except it really is in this case. We moved 4 points, and that's a huge deal.
Outstanding. Yeah, no one's going to argue compensating teachers to the best of our ability at local districts, right? Everyone's
Right.
going to push and encourage that. And I'll have a few questions about teacher recruitment and retention here a little bit later. As we move into that, though, let's talk a little bit about rural education. Obviously, South Dakota is a rural state. We'd be considered a rural state with a really strong agriculturally based economy. Talk a little bit about what unique challenges do our school districts face that you've seen in your conversations with stakeholders statewide? And then how is the department supporting those unique challenges? Or what are you doing, you feel, at the department level to support those unique challenges?
Sure. Well, the key impact of rural education, and by the way, rural education is a huge plus. I mean, we have some great schools out there, great communities, great people. I mean, we often talk about it as a problem, but truthfully, it's a great advantage as well. Where it becomes a problem is that we have some very small population size in some very distant areas. When I go to the meetings of the Council of State School Officers across the state, people will say, "Well, so what's South Dakota like?" I said, "Well, we have school districts, and when I'm talking to Delaware, bigger than your state." Now, by student numbers, no, they have way more than us. But in terms of geography, I mean, Meade School District is massive, and it's kind of a bragging right out there. We had something I kind of teased them about, them in Rhode Island, and. But what it does, of course, is it has very few students out there. We're trying to get those resources off and how to do that. We have a state finance formula that doesn't really adjust for that, nor can it. If you're going to have equity, you're going to have equity. We do have the sparsity factor, and we do provide some assistance through that. The DOE attempts to help with that situation by being more available to them. Now, we're available to every school district. But when we see a school out there and it's a very rural area struggling with something, we make the call. We don't tend to call Sioux Falls and say, "Hey, need some assistance with that?" Because Sioux Falls has got the people and the expertise and the mass of students that allows them to make those decisions and go with that. But when we have a very small school district, we'll just reach out to them and say, "So, how's this working for you? Is there anything we can do for you? Where are you at?" And that seems to work pretty well. Obviously, in terms of the other areas, rural, If you talk about the virtual center up in Northern State, what an incredible thing that is, that those courses. And those courses are available to all, of course, but the priority is given to the smaller school districts. And in that way, we're making sure that those students are also taken care of. We're pretty proud of that program as well.
Excellent. As you know, most all students are educated in public schools in South Dakota, and we're proud of the hard work, talent, and dedication that our educators and it's teachers, it's paraprofessionals, custodians, bus drivers, administrators. It takes everybody to make it work, right? And we're really proud of what we're doing in our state. You can't rely on your laurels. Our ACT's above the national average. We're doing overall well on the NAEP compared to a lot of other states as well. We've done overall pretty well on there. So in South Dakota, we're really excited about the future and what we can do and what we provide our kids and communities. Talk to us a little bit about what ways the state can best support our public K-12 schools.
Sure. We can do that in a number of ways. First of all, we can continue to approve standards that are rigorous with high expectations. And we can also apply an accountability system to state testing that does that as well. When we can mark that out, we need to do that. And we need to tell that message. So, when I've been talking to legislators over the last year about this issue, there's some perception that, well, since our reading scores are at 52% proficient, that means half our kids can't read. Well, no, it does not mean that. And, I've said this 100 times in your presence as well. What it means is they're not reading at grade level. And the expectation is high. Our cut scores are high. They should be high because we want those students to be mastering them at that level. Additionally, we need to provide grant opportunities for school districts. And that's why we went after that $54 million literacy grant so that we could provide those dollars to our districts. A third one is, or fourth one rather, is federal funding. We try really hard to make sure that what federal funds come down to us get out to the schools. I had a couple of people say to me, what about this Iowa flexibility where they were able to free up another $9 million for the schools? We'd already done that. I mean, we were already getting those dollars out. We have a very small amount of money in overhead that we provide all the different programs that we do there. We don't have any kind of that money, any kind of the volume of that money that a state like Iowa does. But what I will say is that as this United States Department of Education transition continues, we need to be at the table, and we are at the table. Unfortunately, the Undersecretary, Dr. Kristen Basler from North Dakota, she's from our area and she's from our experience, so that's happening. We need to make sure that whatever the new formula is that happens, they've talked about block grants for all the title programs, meets the needs of South Dakota. So that's what we're kind of focusing on there as well. What we want to do is we want to be able to have school districts make decisions, database decisions, on how they can best spend those dollars. This whole idea of we've got one thing for Title I and one thing for Title II and one thing for Title III, that's silly. I get why they do it because they need to have some control on that system at that level. But once those federal dollars get into a block grant, we need to really find a way to say, okay, districts, here's your money. You focus where you need to be. A bit like the REAP program that we have that supports the smaller schools. We need to have that for all schools.
How is the department, the State Department of Ed, would staffing or anything need to change if that were to shift and there were some changes from a U.S. Department of Ed perspective in like block grants? Or how are we positioned at this time? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it would take some changes in our personnel and in the way we organize things because currently we have somebody in charge of Title I and those kinds of things. We would need to alter that in some manner, but our people have a lot of expertise. I don't see it being an issue for the DOE in terms of having a different funding stream.
Let's move on and transition a little bit to talk about teacher recruitment and retention. Obviously, critical factor, the most critical factor, teacher in front of students, right? In terms of teaching, learning, high priority on getting the best quality educators and teachers we can. Continues to be a challenge, right? It's certainly not, hasn't gone away, and it probably won't completely go away. What strategies or what and creative things have you done at the department Do you feel our state has done? And I could talk about a few of them, but I kind of want to lead into that with you as far as prioritizing support to districts and providing some opportunities and encouragement for teacher recruitment and retention.
Yeah, that's been a huge issue for us, and it's one we've really focused on. Dr. Catherine Blaha initiated the teacher apprenticeship program. I think you're familiar with, I know you're familiar with that. I'm not sure your listeners are, but basically, we're taking paraeducators, helping them to finish their 4-year degree because many of them had started it, and then become certified teachers. Why is that critical? Because those people weren't going to become certified teachers, and yet they already have all the skills necessary in many cases because they're serving as paras in schools. So we had a first cohort and it went very well. When we got to the second cohort, we no longer had the money. It was COVID dollars. We were running out of it. The Department of Labor stepped in. And so Secretary Holtman stepped in. That was a wonderful thing for us. She came in. David DeYoung at DSU and NSU as well, they've been helping with that. They've been providing the actual classes and the preparation work. And so that's gone great. Now we started with like 88 people in the first cohort. Second cohort is a little smaller than about 80, and the third cohort is like 50. But again, the funding has continued, which we did not expect to be able to have happen. That is filling positions, and it's going very well. And those people are, by and large, finishing the work, and they're signing a contract with the district that supported them. As you know, we've kicked in the dollars, but we required $1,000 from per semester, or was it per year? Can't remember. From the school districts, and we required $1,000 from the paraeducators on the same level as why. Why did we do that? We did it because we wanted them to have to be in the game. We wanted them to have a connection there, and that's really worked well. We also wanted to make sure that people weren't referring anybody. We wanted to make sure they were referring somebody that they thought would really be a good teacher. So by requiring the dollar amount, that kind of hit that as well. Gone very well. We're going to graduate our second group this May. I know we have about 60 people now teaching in South Dakota who would not have otherwise. Our shortage was about 300. So if we've knocked out, 20% of that shortage, fantastic. Whether we'll ever get rid of the shortage is questionable. What I will say is this. When we were back in the day, we always still had some shortages. Even though when we had an elementary opening, we'd fill three file cabinets with all the applications. We could pick anybody we wanted. It was wonderful. But we still couldn't find the advanced chem guy. We still couldn't find the instrumental music guy or a couple others like that. So there was always a little bit of a shortage. It was just manageable. Now it kind of hit all areas, almost all areas we couldn't find. For those positions, this is really going to help with that. Beyond that, we also have some certificate flexibilities, and those will continue. We're letting people in to get in who then can start working, and then they can finish out the work they have. One of the key things we focused on is we didn't want this to be simply just open the doors. Just, you know what, certification isn't required anymore. Kind of whoever wants to teach can teach. That would be a mistake, and that would be a race to the bottom in some areas, and that would be just a huge problem. So we haven't permitted it that way. We have allowed people to get in. Third thing is, and you've heard me testify on this, I think we need to deal with the current situation in reality in our country with student behavior and student violence. We've got to get that under control because it's driving teachers out of the profession. When we mark every year how many teachers are leaving the profession, because of course somebody's going to leave every year. You're going to have a certain number of people who are retiring or whatever else. What we're noticing though is the percentage of those who are leaving the profession but not retiring, has more than doubled. And that's concerning. No matter how much we work to fill the pipeline on the one end, if it's draining out the sides, we're not going to get there. So that's something I think we need to get ahead for. As you know, we're going to be meeting with you and some of the other ed groups and in the future days to try to figure out to bring back that bill and get it back in front of House Ed soon. But I just want teachers to know we're working on it, and I'm hopeful that we're going to get a handle on this quickly, and hopefully South Dakota can lead on this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly very supportive of our teachers and the work needs to be done in that realm. When I was principal superintendent teaching, you always talk about, and I heard you testify to the concept of there's 25 students in the room. We can't have one person disrupting and creating challenges and issues behaviorally that's stopping the learning from the other 24. kiddos. So, to that point, well, we'll talk a little bit about behavioral health and mental health, here in a little bit too, but lean into this a little bit on the teacher recruitment retention part. How can school boards play a more active role, Secretary, in developing and retaining strong educators and administrators? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, a couple things. Number one, develop from within. So the best thing you can do as a school board is to try to make sure you're doing that from within. Educators Rising is a great example, and that's something school boards can really support and should support. That is taking your high school students who are heading off to college, doing the sign-offs, like you do with the athletes, and hey, we're signing on and we're going to become a teacher back here in this high school. That's a fantastic thing. It is amazing how many of those people actually do then come back. And then in terms of keeping people, I would talk about just a couple factors. One is funding. Give as much as you can to the teachers. Support them as to the degree you can. Obviously, you can't say we're going to pay what Minnesota pays. Well, no, Minnesota has a different funding formula. We can't pay that much, unfortunately. But that's the way that's going to work, and that's the way it's going to be. And also, our cost of living is better in South Dakota. And then provide autonomy. People want in their jobs, they want to make sure they're being paid at a fair rate, at a fair wage. And by the way, we are paying teachers in South Dakota far better than we used to. So it's not as if we're maybe where we need to be, but it is much better than it used to be. And then give them autonomy. And that's that local control again. Professionals want the ability to make the professional decisions on their own. If we're micromanaging teachers, we're going to drive them out. Tim, that's the advice I give school boards is pay them and then let them do their jobs.
Outstanding. Let's talk a little bit about student well-being. And we had talked a little bit, you had talked about behavior previously a little bit. Talk about behavioral health and mental health, two different things, yet they kind of bridge together as well, which, they obviously overlap to a degree. How is the department addressing the needs of student behavioral health?
Well, and again, that's the student violence thing is one thing we're doing. The other thing we are doing is our counseling office is working on this issue as well and providing support for that. We're about 2 weeks away from National School Counseling Week, and that's something they support as well. But I will say this, there is also another step that you shouldn't take in this whole area, and that is one of the things we've learned from behavioral economics is that you don't want to push so far in these areas as to begin to make excuses for people and to begin to say, you really should feel like you're not up to this task. You really should feel like maybe things are hard for you and so you need to back off. We also need to be providing grit and resilience. And so one of the things we did do was we created a program called South Dakota Sturdy. It's available to guidance counselors, elementary and middle school. I could use it in high school as well, but it's just designed more for the other. And to help kids understand that, hey, everybody has it tough. And so you shouldn't include yourself in as a victim. There are other people who are victims who actually have, who need this kind of assistance. Make sure you aren't one of those people. Make sure you're one of those people who instead says, hey, I got this.
Angela Duckworth's done a lot of, has written books, done a lot of research, been a kind of a renowned person when it comes to talking about grit and resilience and developing, grit and resilience in kids, and certainly something that's certainly a priority. Talk a little bit about what you think school boards can do locally, Secretary, to support the whole child while navigating limited resources. Because let's face it, there are beds that sometimes there's not beds available for certain scenarios. There are extreme scenarios where those options aren't there. So what can local boards do with the limited resources and some of those challenges? Because it's a really big picture challenge across multiple agencies, across multiple organizations. What are your thoughts there from support of the whole child that boards can do to, navigate that situation?
Well, I think truthfully, the best thing a board can do is to focus its efforts on what it does well, and that's academics. If you're spending a lot of your resources, a lot of your time, a lot of your discussion on areas where you frankly don't know what you're doing and that really belongs to other people, then you're probably squandering your resources. Spend it on the academics, spend it on improving those. Because truthfully, one of the great ways of a student feeling good about themselves and behaving themselves is if they're having success. So let's do everything we can to make sure they're having that academic success in the classroom.
How should school boards interpret state assessment data? You mentioned focus on academics, and you're so right. I believe greatly that people tend to attract to and magnify to things they're good at, right? And it doesn't matter if you're 2 years old or if you're an adult, you tend to magnify to things that you have success at and that you're good at. Talk a little bit about interpretation of state assessment data, academics, and how we can use that to be constructive rather than punitive.
I guess several things. Number one, know your data. So many people don't really know their data, they don't understand their data. And so you need to be able to do that. Second, focus on improvement. So if you're down in the dumps and you feel like you're not getting where you need to be in this area, well, don't say, okay, we're going to move from 30% proficiency in this area to 60. Focus on, hey, next year we're going to get to a certain percentage better, constantly working on that improvement. The other thing is to celebrate when you can. So when you've got that area where things are going well, celebrate that and make sure people are aware of it. By getting the data out there, even when the data is a tough message up front, get it out there so you can show that improvement at a later time and make sure that people understand what those numbers mean.
Yeah, certainly. Celebrating success is critical. Sometimes in education, we tend to be a humble group. We don't do that quite as often sometimes as I think we can. I think we're starting to try to encourage that more and more because we know our schools and kiddos and educators are doing great work. So celebrate successes, set high expectations, also set reasonable expectations. As you mentioned, go from 30% to 60% maybe isn't realistic, but maybe to go from 30 to 35 or whatever that number happens to be. But certainly a celebration of success is important in that regard, as well as we set high and realistic expectations. What changes, if any, do you foresee in the accountability systems here in South Dakota? And if you do, how should boards prepare? What are your thoughts there?
I don't actually see many changes in the accountability system. I think what we've got right now has like a long history. Long history, I mean about 10 years. But we've got the data going back. We can monitor it. We can show how we're doing. We can make those comparisons. That's why I'm really high on the current accountability system that we have. As the Federal Department of Education changes things, that might change it as well. But right now, I think where we need to be.
So in the Smarter Balance, initially in that consortium, from an accountability perspective, federal government requires certain things of the states, right, as far as ESSA. So Smarter Balance started off with roughly 30 states or so in the consortium, has dwindled down to, and I shouldn't use the word dwindled, but has shrunk down to approximately 11 states, I believe, and a couple U.S. territories. What's the rationale or reason do you think that consortium shrunk? Maybe by half would be a fair number to utilize.
I don't really know. I don't know those states, why they've done that. I mean, I can conjecture on some thoughts of why they might have done that. We do know that the Smarter Balance is statistically reliable, and that it is valid. And so we're thinking it's a good thing. Now, I will say this, we did switch to ACT for the high school level. So at the 11th grade, we're going to be moving on to the ACT this spring, and that'll be an interesting change. But that just had such a great argument for, taking a test away from kids. We test a lot. There's a way we can test differently in such a way as to eliminate a test and still get all the same data. Great. And that's kind of what we did. But other than that, our data stream looks pretty good. We've got the history. We want to continue.
Talk a little bit about the ACT transition there. So that'll be happening this spring with juniors. So it replaces the Smarter Balance for juniors. More than likely, we're fully anticipating just the way data works, et cetera, statistics and probability, that ACT scores will go down to a
They will
degree for.
absolutely go down. Period.
Yeah. What do you have any predictions or thoughts on how much those ACT scores could decrease, Secretary?
I would say they're going to fall between 1.5 and 2.5 points on the composite. And that's simply because we were testing 60% of the kids. Now we're going to be testing 95% of the kids.
Talk a little bit about the benchmarks for that. When, like, from a test score perspective on the ACT, when will those composite scores and some of that information be determined? Or is it already determined?
The composite scores are a function of the ACT ranking system.
So what will be considered proficient for a ju for the ju for a junior? So
Oh, okay. So the
let's say I
proficiency.
have a junior in high school.
Yep.
What number on the ACT score specifically will be considered like advanced or proficient? What's that proficiency mark if there is one?
Right, and that has to be determined yet. However, ACT has some very strong data and history on that and what does constitute those things. So probably those numbers are pretty well known or will be pretty well known, but there will be a group looking at that as well.
So we'll have a group in South Dakota that will review that information.
Correct.
All right, let's talk a little bit about money and funding. Obviously, and in the funding conversation also kind of interweave some policy discussion as well. Funding's always an important topic of discussion and priority. It's not going away. It is all the time. And state statute defines the funding of our school to be at 3% or CPIW, whichever is less. What ideas do you have to generate revenue in South Dakota to help fund the statutory requirement for education? As you know, this year we had a 0% recommended increase or a flat increase, which in schools is candidly usually a cut, right, for the following year with the cost of other things. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean the 3% or CPI we often talk about, that's the law. Well, the truth is though, it's whatever the state legislature and the governor give as an increase in the following year. So that's a it's a metric, it's sort of a budgeting metric that helps. Right now, South Dakota does have some options. Including opt-outs that that provide funding there. I know a number of school districts are increasingly becoming invested in foundations, so those exist. It's going to be really hard to talk about other funding sources for schools this year, simply because what's everybody talking about? Property taxes went crazy, and they did. Appraisals just went nuts because of the housing situation and the different assessments. So, I mean, that's just a hard conversation to have right now. First, we're going to have to fight our way through this question of how do we treat people fairly on their property taxes. I mean, we're in the middle of a gubernatorial primary on that issue as well. So, we're going to have to kind of fight through that for that first.
Right. It's interesting. Folks talk, the legislature, we use the formula they built, they passed, signed into law, and it's built on, good chunk of it's built on local effort or property taxes. So it's the formula and the process or part of it that we have that we were given as schools in that formula. And it's such a challenge when we talk about property taxes because it's one of the things people tend to talk about. And we're certainly sentimental. And understanding that, hey, everyone wants lower property taxes. All right. We want, hey, raise your hand if you want lower property taxes. I think we can all probably say I'd love it to be lower. But the reality is the system that we have in place, local effort or property taxes is a good chunk of that, and or a majority of that.
When I was superintendent of Mitchell one year, another member of my household, who shall go unnamed, pointed out to me that our property tax on our house had just gone crazy. And it had jumped. And we hadn't done any renovation or anything like that. And so I said, huh, that's weird. And the other person said, well, maybe we should go down and challenge that. And I said, the superintendent of schools in Mitchell, South Dakota is not going to challenge his appraisal. That's just the way that works. But yeah, I mean, everybody feels it. Everybody goes, wow, all of a sudden I'm paying another $500. And that seems like a lot. And I get it. It's troubling.
At associate school boards, it's pretty simple for us. It's complicated, but it's simple. If we don't have a replacement revenue source, that's the million, that's the million billion dollar question, right? Is what's the replacement if it's not that? So as you know, South Dakota's number two in overall tax competitiveness in the country according to Tax Foundation in 2026. So from a tax perspective, we're quite competitive in the country and certainly quite competitive as well in the Midwest with when you compare everything tax-wise. Let's talk a little bit about policy or funding challenges that keep you up at night as a Secretary of Education.
Yeah, I tell you, it goes back to reading. We've got to get that. We've got to get that elevated. We've got to get science of reading implemented across the state in a very fundamental, effective way, and that is definitely what keeps me up at night because that is the whole building basis of all of our students. You've got to get that in place. Now, as you pointed out correctly, our NAEP scores, and the NAEP scores, the National Assessment of Educational Progress scores, are the ones that you can actually compare across states. So you can't compare our proficiency rates to North Dakota or Wyoming or New York because everybody's giving different tests and everybody's giving different cut scores. So you can't make the comparison. NAEP, you can. If you look at our NAEP scores, we do really well. And so that's the kind of thing we need to, when we talk about to people, we need to get the whole message across. And that's when I testified before one of the committees about a month ago and pointed that out. Look, if you want to look at us nationally, then here we are. And then you've got, of course, the international comparisons. I'm still trying to figure out the international comparisons, whether they're testing all students or not. Again, it all really it matters. Our kids do well. Our kids do well in college. And so there's some good argument that we are doing better than some would give giving us as messages. And so we need to get that message out. It's not about changing accountability. It's not about changing the testing. It's about making sure that we are giving the proper interpretations of it.
Well, public trust in education is critical, and you kind of referenced a little bit about that earlier. What role do you believe the department plays in strengthening that trust?
There's several things. First of all, the department needs to be perceived and needs to actually make sure it is playing it straight. So not pandering to people and say, oh, we're all doing great with this is Lake Wobegon, but also not underappreciating us, telling us, hey, this is how we're doing, playing it straight, because there has to be somebody who the public can trust to say, what are our scores really like? And you know, I believe that's also true at the local level. However, we always think, but of course, at the local level, we're trying to make sure we're marketing. We're trying to let everybody know, and so we need to do that. There needs to be somebody who then plays it straight. Secondly, I think we need to make sure that we have that community focus. So when people are out there doing that, maybe we need to have some kind of assistance, some kind of professional development where we talk, how can you market your school? How can you take the scores we give you and turn them into a smaller document? When I look at the state accountability projections, we do a really nice job. I mean, if you look at our ability to compare school districts across the board, and for you to look at your local school district and down to your local building, that's an impressive data set. I don't think people are using it very much. I don't think most people are really looking at that and trying to figure that out. We need to get better at that, and we need to help schools provide a more of a better, clearer picture of how their students are doing.
In my experiences over 30 years and all the things we've seen, it's my impression in conversations with a lot of people born and raised in this great state, worked in several schools, large and small, in multiple capacities. I really believe in my heart that communities and parents typically support and really rally behind their local public schools in South Dakota, for their children, for their communities. They really want them to do and be well. Share a success story, Secretary, that you've witnessed or you've heard that demonstrates that support.
I would give you two. Number one would be the Chamberlain Elementary. I mean, that had been something they'd been working on for a number of years, when having a lot of success at it, going through there. But finally, they got the message across, and that bond issue passed in the upper 80s. Where do you ever hear those kind of numbers on a bond issue? We often argue, well, we shouldn't be at 60%. We need to move back to 50% because then we get these darn things passed. Well, the Chamberlain Elementary, and by the way, they built a beautiful elementary school, and they just did a great job in Chamberlain getting that done. That was happening in a number of places during the COVID. When the COVID federal dollars came in and people realized they could access it for that, all of a sudden lots of beautiful buildings were getting built, and communities supported it when they saw they had some assistance with it as well. The other one is those immersion schools in Sioux Falls. Those things are brilliant. And when you look at Sonia Sotomayor Elementary, and you look at the two immersion, partial immersion schools, which is Hayward and Rosa Parks, they're producing something quite extraordinary. I wish every educator could go just sit in that classroom at Sonia Sotomayor and listen to those kids as they learn in both Spanish and English. How many years did we beat our heads against the wall trying to teach high school kids to produce fluency in a foreign language and never got anywhere for the most part? A few did, of course. All of a sudden now, by doing it at the right level, it's happening. And that community supported that. Sioux Falls has a wonderful commitment to their schools, and they're very willing to try innovation. So they have a number of different, they have an arts magnet school. They have that downtown school, I wish I could remember the name, I don't have it in front of me right now, where parents or some other relative is required to come in and volunteer. They're just doing some really cool, innovative things down there, and they're showing the progress. But that community also comes out and supports it.
Absolutely. Two great examples there, and two great schools and communities that are doing a great job for kids. We're kind of winding down here, Secretary, so appreciate you hanging with us here. Looking ahead in a little bit of from a leadership advice perspective, if you could give one piece of advice to a newly elected school board member in South Dakota, what would it be?
Hire a great superintendent and then I'm letting him run the place.
And how about an experienced board member, somebody who maybe has been around for 15 plus years? What should be your advice there?
Well, in that case, it would be hire a great superintendent and then let him or her run the place.
That's great advice. What gives you optimism, Secretary, about the future of public K-12 education in our state?
A whole bunch of things. This literacy initiative we've got going, I think are going to have a real major impact. We're going to really boost morale and respect for our schools and our teachers. Another would be our CTE programming. The CTE program has just seen an incredible growth, and it's not only happened at the middle school and high school level. It's obviously it's being seen what's happening also in our four technical colleges, which are just doing an outstanding job. Those are huge successes, and it means that our kids, as a result of those programs, are going to be really ready for the workplace, and they're really going to be sought after. And we're seeing that they're finding their way into the workforce very quickly in their field and having great success. Third one would be JAG. We have a program called Jobs for Americans Graduates, and it has every year we've had that program in place in the modern era. We've produced all of the graduation rates of students who would be expected to have lower graduation rates than the state average are seeing higher graduation rates, higher retention, higher engagement, the works. So we've got this program that's really working out there, and we've got a private group right now that's struggling, that's trying to figure out a way to support that, to expand that across the state as well.
Sounds great. Well, appreciate your time today. We're at the conclusion here. A lot of great information. Appreciate your insights from your perspective at the Department of Education, the work being done there within the agency and with all of our schools at Associated School Boards of South Dakota. We really encourage, we're gonna working really hard to find some meat on the bone this year from a funding perspective. You knew I had to get that said and back in there. But what would you like to leave us with? Anything you'd like for our listeners and members to take with them today?
Science of reading, focus on it, make it happen. Let's get literacy back in order.
That sounds great. That is Secretary Joe Graves from the Department of Education. Thanks again for being with us today, Secretary.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.